You're listening to the Accidental Creative Podcast. Since 2005, we've delivered weekly tips to help you be prolific, brilliant, and healthy. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. This episode is sponsored in part by our weekly newsletter. It's called Three Things. Get three key principles from each week's podcast episode delivered straight to your inbox every Sunday morning. To subscribe, just visit accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. This episode is also sponsored in part by OMS Photo, an impressive photo and video studio with an in-house photo retouching team. To make a marketing campaign successful requires a great message and a visual that's fantastic. That's where OMS comes in. They deliver full-service photo and video production. Go to omsphoto.com today to view their fantastic photography, retouching, and video portfolios. That's omsphoto.com. What does it mean to be successful? I wrote in my book, Die Empty, that how you define greatness defines you, meaning that what you aspire to, even if you haven't clearly articulated what it is, will shape how you go about your days and determine your priorities for you. If you don't have a clear understanding of what success actually means to you, it's possible to spend your entire life chasing vapor. Well, today's guest is one of the most respected coaches on the planet. Dr. Marshall Goldsmith is the author or editor of 41 books, which have sold more than 2.5 million copies. His books have been translated into 32 languages and have become listed as bestsellers in 12 countries. He's one of a select few executive advisors who has worked with over 200 major CEOs and their management teams. His new book is called The Earned Life, Lose Regret, Choose Fulfillment, in which he discusses the patterns of people who grow a life of meaning and purpose. In this episode, we discuss the nature of an earned life and how to be more purposeful in life and in work. Without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Marshall Goldsmith. Well, I am so thrilled to welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast, Dr. Marshall Goldsmith. He is the author of so many best-selling books. His new book that I can't wait to dive into with him is called The Earned Life, Lose Regret, Choose Fulfillment. Marshall, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
This title was a real head turner for me. I'm intrigued by the title. Why did you call it The Earned Life? Or maybe a better way to ask it is, what is an earned life?
Well, an earned life is when your actions in life and your achievements are aligned with your higher aspirations, regardless of the results, which is one of the real unusual parts of the book. The earned life is not, I worked hard and I won. Because the reality is you can work hard and not win. A lot of life is luck. And so the book says, basically, are you living a life that's the best life you can live?
I love that definition because I think our culture is biased toward those who survive, right? Survivorship bias. So we look at the people who came out on top, the people that they write magazine articles about. And we tend to think, oh, well, I need to emulate those people. But some of those people may not necessarily be living a satisfying life. They may actually be living a less than satisfying life, even though everybody around them is celebrating them.
Well, you know, in my coaching, half the people I coach are billionaires. And there's a common myth that, you know, if I'm rich, I will be happier. When I get this money, I will be happy. Or when I make this achievement, I will be happy. That's what I call the Great Western disease. I will be happy when, fill in the blanks, right? And the reality is, that's just a myth. It's a myth for a couple of reasons. One is, as you said, there's survivor bias. I mean, one of the most ridiculous books ever written was called The Secret. If I envision it, it will happen. Well, you know, Jimmy wanted to be a basketball star and he envisioned it, it happened. And Mary wanted to be a movie star and she envisioned it happened. And Joe wanted his cancer to go away. And all the stories are true. They just didn't interview the dead people or the 1,000 waitresses in Hollywood. And they didn't interview the basketball team that lost, who all wished for the same thing, right? So that's the term you use, is a very apropos term, the survivor bias. I have a degree in math. That's what it's called, the survivor bias. And so in life, you know, in life, I think the important point is not getting addicted to results. Because if you get addicted to results, one, what happens if you don't achieve the results, which, by the way, are not usually in your control anyway, partially in your control. And then number two, what happens after you do achieve the results? Mm. Well, you're happy for how long? A week or two?
There's a phenomenal scene from, I don't know if you ever saw the Jerry Seinfeld movie, The Comedian. He did sort of a documentary about comedians. And there was a scene with a young comedian who was kind of an up-and-comer, and he had just received a call to be on The Tonight Show, which for him was sort of that was the pinnacle thing, right, in his career at that moment. And they were following him as he was calling everybody. He called his parents, he called his friends, he called, you know, people he wanted to impress. And then there's a scene right after that. He's sitting on the side of the street and he looks at the camera. He said, "That's it. That's it. The happiness lasted for about 2 minutes while I called everybody. And now, you know, it's all over." And boy, I thought about that scene when I was reading this book, because I thought that's sort of, in some ways, encapsulates what you're talking about. This idea of I'll be happy when. But the reality is often it's not the thing that we get. It's the process that we go through and the way that we go about getting it that actually is more meaningful to us.
That's basically all there is in life. And back to the I'll be happy when, one of the people that said nice things about me in the endorsement section was Albert Bartlett, the CEO of Pfizer. And I called Albert. I said, "Albert, how you doing?" He said, "Oh, pretty good. Saved a billion lives or two with this vaccine thing. And we, you know, came up with this pill and stocks all-time high and CEO of the year and employee engagement's through the roof." So, "Well, that's great. Any challenges?" "Yeah, I've got a huge challenge. Two words, next year." Mm. "Next year." Well, that's the way it is. If you're addicted to achievement, you know, there's next year. What did Michael Phelps, the great swimmer, think about doing after he won his final gold medal? Killing himself. Mm-hmm. Why? There wasn't anything left to swim for. And if we're addicted to that stuff and we have next year has to be better than last year, it just doesn't stop. And the people I coach are just obscenely fantastic achievers. One of them is named Safi Bakal. Safi wrote a book called Loon Shots. He's worth tens of millions of dollars. He started businesses. He's consulted for presidents. You know, he has a PhD in physics from Stanford. And he said he finally realized that, and he talks like a scientist, happiness and achievement are independent variables. That some people achieve a lot and are very happy. Some people achieve a lot and are miserable. Some people achieve nothing and are happy, and some people achieve nothing and they're miserable. That achievement is fine and happiness is fine, but one doesn't lead to the other.
Yeah.
And yeah, be happy to be happy and achieve to achieve.
I love that. We had Safi on the show and my head is still hurting from the conversation because he's such a brilliant guy.
He must have an IQ of 200 or something. He's one of the smartest people I ever met.
Absolutely. And emotionally intelligent as well. That was what, you know, sometimes people who are that intelligent, sometimes they don't have the EQ to match their IQ, and he has both, which is frightening. So you argue early in the book that so much of our life is lived on this continuum between regret and fulfillment. And often those who should be the most fulfilled are actually full of regret. And it isn't always even related to achievement. It isn't always related to absolute achievement. How should we think about that regret fulfillment continuum?
Well, I really think the important thing to recognize for a lot of the book is a lot of what I talk about comes from the inside, not from the outside. And almost all, quote, self-help books are how to achieve more. And they're almost all focused on the wonderfulness of delayed gratification over and over. You know, they're all techniques to delay gratification and achieve more. And again, nothing wrong with achievement, but if you really put your soul in achievement, it's a fool's game. It's a game you're never going to win. And the book is really different because it says, look, there's nothing wrong with achievement, but it needs to be connected to something higher. So I think the part of the book that really resonates with people is you've got your aspiration, which is this higher purpose. What am I here for? And then you have your ambition, which is related to achievement. What am I achieving? And then you've got your action. It's what am I doing every day? And most humans are kind of lost in the action phase. You know, they just go through life and they're watch the video game and go to the movies and do their job. And they're not bad people, but they're just living day to day. That's humanity. That's most of human beings. That's not who listens to your podcast. That's not who reads my books. And certainly not who I coach. People I coach, their biggest problem is achievement. Their biggest problem is achievement because they've already achieved some obscene amounts. And it's kind of like, well, how much do you have to achieve before you declare victory here? You know, it's just ridiculous. Like Safi, I had this conversation with Safi. How much do you have to achieve before you say, wait a minute, this gets ridiculous at a certain point in time? They've already achieved so much. So And if you just focus on achievement, two bad things can happen. One, you can forget why you're doing this. What am I achieving all this stuff for? And then two, you can forget to enjoy life.
Yeah. A book that I loved that deeply inspired me was a book by Clayton Christensen called How Do You Measure a Life? And this book actually reminds me a lot of that book in a sense. I feel like Clayton Christensen's book was kind of a looking backward book. And this book feels more like a looking forward book. This is more about how do you grow a life, right? In many ways. And one of the concepts, just to build on what you just said, this concept of action, ambition, and aspiration, you say aspiration is privileging your future over your present. Could you maybe dive into that concept a little more? Because I think that's, in some ways, it resonates with what you just said, right? This idea that we want to make certain that we're not compromising the future for the present. We also make sure we're not compromising the present for the sake of some future ambition. So how should we think about that?
Well, I think if you look at the concept of the aspiration, ambition, and action, the idea is alignment. Mm-hmm. To the degree those things are aligned, you're doing all three at once. So you're not sacrificing anything for anything else. And the key on the larger aspiration, though, is you need to have a reason. And the book is not really a religious book. It's more of a philosophical book or a psychological book. But you have to have some reason for doing this stuff. Like, okay, you're busting your butt all the time. Why? And if you don't have a higher aspiration, you can kind of forget, why am I doing this? And there's, you know, story after story of like the politician who starts out with these lofty goals and then they have to sell out to be elected. And then after a while, they've just forgotten what they're there for. They're just getting, winning the next election becomes everything. And they forget, why am I winning this election? Well, what does this all mean anyway? And as you said, though, one of my favorite parts of the book is the part about the marshmallows. I love that part. So, you know, the marshmallow research, where it says to these kids, you give them a marshmallow, you eat the marshmallow now, you get one, you wait though, oh, you get two. The whole point of the book is all these kids that waited became PhDs from Harvard, and all the kids that ate the marshmallows were drug addicts or something along those lines. But anyway, the idea is delayed gratification is good. That's the whole point of the research. Mm-hmm. What they didn't do in the research is they didn't take the kid that had already got two and said, kid, you wait a little longer? Three. Let's wait some more. Four. Wait some more. Five. 10. 20. Where do you end up? An old man waiting to die in a room surrounded by unneeded marshmallows. And the other story I like in the book is the Jack Welch story. Because, you know, my friend knows Jack Welch, and Jack Welch almost dies with a triple bypass. So my friend says, what'd you learn about life when you almost die? He said, why am I drinking the cheap wine? Jack Welch is rich, right? He's CEO. He's rich. He has this incredible wine cellar with all these fancy wines. Every night he's drinking cheap wine. He's waiting for the wine in his wine cellar to appreciate. Jack Welch, what does it matter? He said, this is insane. What am I doing here? Drink the wine. So he made one commitment. No more cheap wine for me.
I love that. And there's so much in that, so many of us put off things that we know are important to us, things that we know that we want to get around to, conversation. I mean, it doesn't have to be some big business ambition. It could be a conversation that we need to have a relationship we need to reconcile, or just even, I'm going to take a day and go visit this place. You know, I'm going to go on a retreat, or I'm going to go see a movie just to enjoy watching a movie. You know, we can't do that every day, but there are little things that we know that we need to do that we don't do. What is it in your experience? You've coached so many people who are, by the world standards, highly successful people, right? Immensely successful people.
Ridiculously successful.
Yes. Why do we defer the things we know we should do for the sake of things that really don't matter all that much?
All right, I'm going to make a prediction. The great Western art form, I'm going to predict, is one that you've seen or heard millions of times. It sounds like this. There is a person. Person is sad. They spend money, they buy a product, and they become happy. That's called a commercial.
Yeah.
Now, how many of those have you seen in your life? Pew, pew. Over and over, and the same message. Happiness is out there. And just buy something and it will make you happy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea that happiness and satisfaction is externally generated, it's just pounded into us every day. It's just pounded over and over and over again. And so that's something very different about the book. The book says, no, not really. I mean, if you buy that product, you just have less money in a product. May or may not be happier, but you know, you don't have as much money and you do have a product. Okay, that's nice. That's about it.
This episode is sponsored in part by OMS Photo, an impressive photo and video studio with an in-house photo retouching team. To make a marketing campaign successful requires a great message and eye-catching content. That's where OMS comes in. They deliver full-service photo and video production, whether it's products, lifestyle, drinks, splash, food, or portraits. The creatives at OMS are there to make any idea a reality. With studios in Cincinnati, Denver, and Orlando, their team is uniquely talented to scale to meet various brand needs, everything from CPG to high-end advertising. So go to omsphoto.com today to view their fantastic photography, retouching, and video portfolios. See why countless brands have trusted them to do the job right. That's omsphoto.com, omsphoto.com. This episode is also sponsored in part by Storyblocks. Listen, today's audiences require compelling video storytelling to win their attention, but the creative process is still inefficient and demanding. Storyblocks makes it possible for creators to keep up with the growing demands for modern video content, so you can bring all your stories to life and stop sacrificing your vision due to time, budget, or resources. Storyblocks has an ever-growing library that's demand-driven, so they're constantly optimizing and adding to their 4K and HD footage, After Effects and Premiere Pro templates, music, images, sound effects, and more give you everything you need to bring your stories to life. And assets are royalty-free, so you can use your downloaded content anywhere for commercial and personal use. And there are subscriptions for every budget. You can choose a plan that works for you from their selection of flexible subscriptions that scale to give you all the content and tools you need to focus on creating, not worrying about budget. Storyblocks' unlimited all-access plan gives you unlimited downloads to the over 1 million assets in their library, so you can try out multiple options quickly and find the perfect fit, and you can create more and spend less without sacrificing quality. And if you're a member of a large creative team, a marketing agency, or a media organization, Storyblocks has an enterprise license that has your back with comprehensive coverage for your entire company that enables you to distribute wherever, whenever. So learn more about Storyblocks at storyblocks.com/TAC. Again, that's storyblocks.com/TAC. What one commercial that's on right now that, and I'm probably going to make some enemies when I say this, but that's okay, is a commercial. And sometimes these commercials drive me crazy the most are the ones that sort of play on virtues and sort of turn them toward commercial purposes. And one of them is a crypto commercial that's, you know, fortune favors the brave. And I'm thinking, okay, bravery is, you know, hedging all of your investment on speculative, you know, something. And you're not brave if you don't do that. And I'm thinking I don't think that word means what they think it does. I don't think the word brave means what they think it does.
Martin Lindstrom is a great friend of mine. He's a world's expert on branding. And he taught me a lot about that. Back in the empathy chapter, I talk about this, how advertisers, there's one type of empathy, it's called cognitive empathy or the empathy of understanding. Advertisers are brilliant at this. So you look at Budweiser, they spend literally hundreds of millions of dollars on ads featuring a dog and a horse. You know, the dog likes the horse and they're romping around and it's so cute. Now, more hundreds of millions are spent on people buying beer after watching that commercial. Nobody is going to go in the store. Some man is going to say, you know, I'm really buying this because I love the little horsey and the dog. No, right. That's exactly what they're doing. Why? Because they understand this emotional connection with the horse and the dog. You go in, you see the beer, you say, if I buy the beer, I'm supporting the horse and the dog. Yeah. And yes. I mean, it sounds insane. It works. And we're not even conscious of it happening to us. So a lot of this understanding thing is just, we're not even conscious of it. A lot of our motivations are not really conscious at all. They're just, you know, controlled by external factors we don't even think about.
Hmm. Yeah. You describe a practice in the book. By the way, one of the things I really enjoyed about the book is it's so very practical. I mentioned you before we started recording that I'm planning on taking this with me on a trip with my family, and this is going to be all week, this is going to be my read. This is going to be the book I dive into. But the problem is it's probably going to take me 2 months to really dive in and get through it all. But there are so many practical, tactical exercises in the book. One of them is called the two letters exercise. I thought this was really profound. Could you describe this exercise for us?
One is you're writing a letter to the previous you. Well, before we get into exercise, a little bit of background. Sure. A big premise of the book, I'm a Buddhist. I'm not a religious Buddhist, but I'm a philosophical Buddhist. So the book is built on a lot of Buddhist philosophy. One Buddhist philosophy is every time I take a breath, it's a new me. Mm-hmm. And whatever happened before was done by the previous me. And life is a constant series of restarts. You know, new me, new me. And literally the you that's at the end of this call is not the same you that was at the beginning of this call. And I'm not the same person. We have become different people. And that's okay. And as you go through life, you're constantly, constantly changing. Well, one way to reinforce this is to send a letter to some previous version of you and thank them. Thank them. And an exercise I do is I have people close their eyes and I say, think of all the previous versions of you. And think of all those nice things they did for you and how they helped others and how hard they worked. If any group of people did that stuff, what should you say to them? Well, thank you. And it's really good to, you know, forgive the previous yous for the mistakes they made and just thank them for what they did to help you. And then the other one is writing a letter to the future version of you. And that was kind of inspired because I do these programs where I have retiring people or transitioning people, shouldn't say retiring, transitioning people in all different walks of life. I just did one and I had Pau Gasol there. Pau's a basketball star and, you know, he's 41, so he's transitioning. I had a former CEO of Guardian Life. I had a couple of other CEOs who are transitioning out. You know, I've had Eric Schoenberg, he was head of Inc. and Fast Company. He's leaving his job. And it's like, what are you going to do now? And it's really fascinating because then you realize all that achievement stuff doesn't matter. Those people are probably not really your friends. And it's, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do now? And one of the guys in the session inspired the exercise. He said, you know, I worked for the last 40 years, 80 hours. I worked 80 hours a week for 40 years with one goal, so my kids would never have to do this. Then he said, that was the worst thing I could have ever done for myself or for my kids or for my family. Mm-hmm. It was a disaster. The worst thing I could have done. Well, I talk about the forward letter. And what he should have done is look at that money as an investment, not a gift. A letter to the kids that said, you know, kids, I'm going to try to help you do something meaningful with your life. I'm going to give you opportunities. But I just want a couple things back. One, some gratitude. And then two, I want you to do something meaningful. And if you look at, well, my daughter's got three friends who live on trust funds, and they're basically bums. They're rich bums. They're not bad people. But they don't do anything. They're just bums. And so I think, you know, really important to think about that letter going forward. You're making an investment. And it could be a letter to yourself, you know, because we think about the future version of ourselves as kind of another person. And think about that other person, say, you know, I'm going to make an investment in you. Here's what I'd like to see back from that investment. As opposed to just saying, I'm going to work hard and give you money.
I love that concept. It reminds me of John Adams' quote. He said, we study, I'm going to get this wrong, but we study war and politics and economics so that our children can study art and music and philosophy, right? It's just this idea that, you know, the reason that we're doing what we're doing is so that our children can have a better opportunity and at the same time recognize the blessings that were given because of the sacrifices that we made. And I love that concept.
Right. And it's, we don't think about, you know, that idea of the future version of me is a different person. I do lots of LinkedIns, and my LinkedIn post that had the most positive reaction said, forgive other people for being who they are. And forgive yourself for believing they were someone else. And just letting go of the past and not carrying all that stuff around and all that anger and bad feelings, For what?
Yeah. Yeah, but it makes us feel good and justified in the moment, right? But but it's not helpful. It's not useful. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. And it doesn't make you feel good very long either.
Right. So at the very end of the book, and we've just sort of, we're like a stone skipping over the water here. We barely covered any of the concepts in the book. But at the end of the book, you talk about the concept of the impossible, and you challenge people to ask a question. It's actually a conversation between Donald Hall and Henry Moore, where the question came up, you know, what is your impossible? Could you talk a little bit about that concept and frame it up for us?
Yeah, that really gets at the concept of what's your aspiration, because your aspiration doesn't have a finish line. And the quote was, you know, what is that impossible task you can spend your whole life on and enjoy it? And that's it. You really want to do something with where there isn't the finish line. There isn't this, I won the race. The problem with the finish line is you finish. Well, okay. Then what? Okay, you finish. And I like one of the chapters, it's called After the Victory Lap. Now, what do you do after you take the victory lap? Well, guess what? Life is still going on.
Yeah.
And people all applaud and jump it down for, I don't know, an hour or two. But after that, next, next, next. You know, and so the idea is really to have a great life, you need a higher aspiration that doesn't have a finish line, something you can work on forever. And then number two, you need to have achievement to connect to that. So when you achieve something, you're not just achieving to achieving, your achievement is connected to this higher thing, and you need to enjoy the process of doing it. So let's assuming you have a middle-class income and assuming that you're healthy and you have good relationships with people you love, then the only three things that matter are you have a higher purpose, your achievement is connected to that purpose, and you enjoy the process. If the answer is yes, yes, and yes, you won. You just won the game of life.
That's such a valuable framework. And it's something, it's the great thing about it is I think for so many people, success is undefined. You know, they don't have a clear target that they're aiming for, but just having that as a simple checklist, I think is a great, it's a wonderful way for us to just to determine if we're on course, you know, if we're navigating in the right direction.
Well, and the answer to all those questions can only come from inside you. I cannot tell you what your higher aspiration in life is. I cannot tell you what achievement is meaningful for you. And I'm not telling you what you enjoy doing. You know, that all has to come from the inside, not from the outside. The problem is in life, we've been programmed to believe it all comes from the outside. I mean, somebody did a study of people who won the lottery and people who are quadriplegic. 3 years later, there wasn't that much difference in happiness. The lottery winners were not much happier than the quadriplegics. But happiness doesn't come from out there. If it did, the lottery winners would be ecstatic and the quadriplegics would all be miserable. No. It's mostly from in here.
We've been talking with Marshall Goldsmith. He's the author of The Earned Life, Lose Regret, Choose Fulfillment. Marshall, if people want to come learn more about you and learn about your work and your books, where would you send them?
First, you can go to my website, www.marshallgoldsmith.com, and Marshall has two L's, very easy. My email, I love getting emails, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com, and then just all the normal social media, but specifically LinkedIn. I have 1.3-something million followers on LinkedIn, so I'm always writing stuff there.
The book is outstanding. Every single chapter was like a finger in my chest, which is why I'm going to go back and reread it in depth with a highlighter in my hand. So thank you for writing it. And thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
What a very fun, wide-ranging conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.